This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
You've probably heard the story from a friend or acquaintance. The September 11th World Trade Center attacks were planned and executed from within the US government. Maybe yours was one of the 10 million downloads of the internet film Loose Change that also maintains that the 9/11 was an inside job. And they provide mounds of evidence to make a case for a massive conspiracy to fool the public. Conspiracy theories, like those surrounding 9/11, are not new. Others have circulated about the moon landing and the death of Princess Diana. Michael Shermer is the founder of the US-based Skeptic Society and editor of their magazine, The Skeptic. He's joined me by phone from California to talk about conspiracy theories. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
The message we hear with 9/11 is that we've just got to look at the evidence and we will understand that it must have been a conspiracy. What sort of evidence is given?
It's mainly stringing together a bunch of factoids, no one of which holds any water at all, but when put together in a conspiratorial pattern makes it seem like there might be something nefarious at work. And this is just classic pattern-seeking behavior, you know, connecting the dots. It's all false positives. The connections aren't really there. First, we should clarify, of course, there was a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy by Al-Qaeda and the 19 operatives and whoever was behind them. That's a given. But what is claimed is that the Bush administration on some level had some involvement as well. And so that's where the facts begin to break down. So if you take, for example, this Internet movie, this whole thing, by the way, is an Internet-driven urban legend, myth, whatever, conspiracy theory. It's based on this film called Loose Change. Anybody can watch it. It's just online. It's free. And it's like watching a Michael Moore movie where it's very compelling to see it kind of strung along from start to finish. And you get to the end and you think, oh, my God, if only like half of this is right. This is, you know, huge, hugely, bigly huge. But then I went and started checking the facts, and it, not only is it not half right, there's nothing right in it. Not a single fact was correct. And so it's all just a tissue of lies, and strung together, it looks compelling, but in fact, there's nothing there.
So what's wrong with the evidence then put forward in the film?
Well, I guess it just depends which claim we want to look at. If you start off with something like why the Twin Towers fell. And so they make a claim like, well, steel melts at 2,700 degrees and jet fuel burns at 1,500 degrees. So clearly the plane impact and the burning of the jet fuel could not have melted the steel, and therefore the buildings could not have fallen due to the impact. Well, this is wrong on multiple levels. First of all, you don't have to completely melt the steel in order to weaken it enough to collapse. You only have to weaken it maybe 50%, which 1,500 degrees will easily do. And that's enough to cause the steel to sag, to cause the force or pressure on the joint bolts holding the steel crossbars to the sides of the buildings to break and snap and start the pancaking effect. So in terms of why they fell or how they fell, there's another claim made that the buildings fell just like buildings do when they're purposely demolished by internal explosions that are preset. In fact, I'm amazed about this. This is such an easy thing to check. If you go on Google video and you type in collapsed buildings, you'll get dozens and dozens of intentionally collapsed buildings, you know, when they take down stadiums and old business buildings from the 30s and 40s and whatnot. Every single one of them collapses from the bottom up. The World Trade Center buildings collapse from the top down. I couldn't find a single example of a top-down intentional demolition. and why does nobody check that? I mean, they see it on the film and they point you to it and say, look at this. Well, did you bother to check? No one ever bothers to check, and it's such an easy thing to check. And And there's hundreds of things like that. Every one of them, when you check, you find out it's not true.
Is there some sort of misuse or misunderstanding of the actual concept of evidence itself?
It's a misunderstanding of two things, both data and theory, the evidence and how it's interpreted. So the way we prove large events like that is through a convergence of evidence from a series of independent lines of inquiry. So let's drop 9/11 for a second and just talk about like how we know the Holocaust happened. The Holocaust deniers say, oh, look at this little factoid or that factoid. Those are anomalies, not explained. Therefore, the whole thing didn't happen. Well, wait a minute. the evidence that the Holocaust happened was never dependent on those one or two little anomalous factoids that you think you found. It's proven by tens of thousands of bits of data from 10,000 places, from millions of people, all converging independently of one another to this conclusion that the Holocaust happened. And it's the same thing how we know evolution happened. Creationists are fond of saying, oh, just show me one transitional fossil. And they think, you know, that if they have one tiny factoid fossil that doesn't seem to fit, that takes down the whole edifice. Well, evolution was never proved in the first place by that one little fossil. So whether you think you can debunk that fossil or not is meaningless to the overall theory. So it's a misinterpretation. I call it the fossil fallacy, in fact, that one fossil proves evolution, one piece of evidence proves the Holocaust, one factoid proves or disproves 9/11. That's not how evidence works at all.
Are there elements that are common to most conspiracy theories or things we call conspiracy theories?
Yes, it's that it's a search for simpler explanations, so almost on Occam's razor, that, you know, let's just reduce the complexity and have just a single simple explanation. So and then there's always this again, it's sort of a misuse of the facts, this fossil fallacy that if you could just find one or two anomalies, that that somehow that brings the whole edifice down. And also that that a single theory should be able to explain every single fact, and if it can't, then the whole thing is false. Well, that's not true. That's just a complete misunderstanding of how things are explained. No theory in science, for example, explains every single fact, every anomaly, everything about the world. It's just the best approximation. What's the best model or theory we have to explain the set of data, given the fact that no theory is going to explain everything? So there's always this residue problem, the residue of unexplained anomalies. They're always there, and we just continue to work on them, but you still accept the prevailing model. So again, I mean, the convergence of evidence is that Al-Qaeda did it, and why don't we take them at their word for it, by the way? I mean, they said they did it. Not only did they say they did it, they were proud to do it. They'd do it again. They wish they would have done more, and so on. I mean, why not just accept them at their word? And let's not forget, there was attempts in 93 to destroy the World Trade Center buildings. Remember the explosions in the parking lot below it? And they had multiple attacks throughout the 90s on various U.S. embassies and properties around the world. And so there's nothing surprising about 9/11 in the context of what came before.
So then, given all that, how do conspiracy theorists argue their case so successfully with so many people in this particular instance, for sure?
Well, I think part of it is that there is a distrust of the Bush administration in general because the war has gone so badly. So that primes people for thinking, yeah, they're up to something, all that Halliburton and Cheney and Rumsfeld and all those guys are in cahoots. And, you know, Americans are sort of naturally skeptical of politics anyway, which is a good thing because, you know, things there are conspiracies that do happen in government circles, no doubt. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of behind-the-scenes things that none of us know about. But that's, of course, different from proving that this particular one actually happened. So I think people are primed for it in the specific case here. But in general, the idea that a complex, chaotic world is not actually really almost inexplicable, almost insoluble, it's so complex. And in fact, there's just 12 guys living in London that control the world, the Illuminati, or it's just this small group of Bush operatives, the people that went to Yale and they belong to that Skull and Crossbones Society, or the Rockefellers, or the Rothschilds, or the Da Vinci Code, or, you know, you name it, that there's some really simple explanation that explains all the myriad complexities of history in this very simple little thing, and I can wrap my mind around it. And then finally, there's this sort of titillating reinforcement you get that you figured it out, that you have an inside track on the secrets of the universe and the world and history, and nobody else has it. And by God, it's not this huge complex thing; it's this very simple thing, and I got it figured out. So that's kind of reinforcing. It makes people feel like they're not quite so helpless, a cog in the giant machine. You know, just another nobody. But wow, in fact, I have inside information.
Yes, I think that from the other side of the story, conspiracy theories are very attractive. I'm wondering whether they address some sort of basic human need.
Oh, the other thing is cognitive dissonance, too. There should be matching causes for the effects that you see. That is, there's something cognitively dissonant about Kennedy being assassinated by a complete nobody, a lone nut, Lee Harvey Oswald. But the fact is, he did it. He did it by himself. All the evidence points to it. None of the conspiracy theories hold up. And there's something disconcerting about that the greatest, most powerful man in the Western world is taken out by some nobody, a complete loser living in the nooks and crannies of society. But if you stop and think about it for just a moment, that is precisely how it could happen. It's the only way it could happen, because in a free democratic society, it is possible for a nobody to disappear into the nooks and crannies and then just suddenly do his thing. Exactly in the same way that Jack Ruby got into the room there and shot Lee Harvey Oswald a couple of days later. But the dissonance there is that a great man must be brought down by a great conspiracy. So no, it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald. It was the FBI and the CIA and Castro and the Russians and the KGB and the Mafia, and you know, all that seems to balance the scale. Great man Kennedy brought down by great conspiracy X. And the same thing, you saw this with Princess Di back when she was killed in the car accident. I mean, what could be more mundane than a car accident, right? You know, speeding, drunk driving, no seatbelts. You have the perfect formula for, you know, death by automobile. It happens, what, 50,000 people a year are killed in American highways due to drunk driving, no seatbelts, and speeding. That's the standard formula. And nobody blinks an eye when they read, you know, somebody was killed in a drunk driving accident. Oh, yeah, yet another one. But when it's Princess Di, it's like, oh, wait a minute. This is a great, beautiful, powerful person. She's important. She can't have been brought down by this mundane explanation. There must be something behind it. And off we go in search of patterns.
I'm wondering, I've heard other people mention that it may be a displacement activity as a way of representing our feelings of powerlessness in the political arena. I wonder if you've got any comments on that.
Yes, again, I do think that ties in. It makes somebody feel like they're not powerless politically. They have an inside track. They know what's going on. We're going to blow the whistle. Those people aren't, you know, pulling the strings there over me. You know, I know what's going on. And I may seem like a nobody lost in this huge sea of Democratic hundreds of millions of people voting, but in fact, I know the secret information, what's really going on. Yeah, it's empowering.
Is there a way of somehow sort of vaccinating ourselves so that we're not so vulnerable to catching one of these sort of conspiracy viruses?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's hard. It's that's the big question, of course. Everybody in skepticism and science education and education in general is concerned about critical thinking studies. This is the whole point. How can we get people to train their minds? And the fact is, it does work. Just being exposed to other ideas, to good explanations. I mean, short of a good explanation, the mind just accepts any default explanation that it hears, as opposed to no explanation. Because we have most people have a low tolerance for ambiguity and uncertainty. We like to have some explanation. So without groups like the skeptics, who are here to provide that other explanation, and there's lots of other groups as well that do this, you know, people will just accept whatever they hear on TV or the news or especially the internet. And so our job is really just education, to say, no, wait a minute, let's consider that evidence, let's look at this other idea. So in a free market of ideas, we have to, you know, fuel good ideas to drive out the bad ideas.
So let's say I'm at a party or in a conversation with some acquaintance who starts, you know, who we're talking quite normally about current affairs, and then who starts promoting something that is like a conspiracy theory. How should I tackle that situation? You got any suggestions?
Well, one way is just to ask questions, you know, because somebody will say something, you know, like, I read somewhere, I saw this thing on the internet about the buildings couldn't have fallen because of the, you know, the planes crashing. Well, you just start asking, how do you know? What? Where did you see that on the internet? What's the quality of the source? I mean, is this a 60 Minutes investigative journalism piece, or is it some blogger? I mean, bloggers are just nobodies. They're just people writing their opinions. My experience with fact-checking on blogs is no one does any fact-checking at all. The internet is completely devoid of fact-checking. There are no fact-checking editors on the internet. And I find that to be the biggest problem, and that's the easiest way to start in on a conversation. How do you know that's even true? I mean, did you go look it up? I mean, melting point of steel. How do you know what the melting point of steel is? I mean, how would you ever know that? In just general knowledge, nobody would. I didn't know it until you go look it up. And so the stuff that's on the internet, and by the way, that melting point of steel, I've seen like 20 different figures for it. They get passed around the internet. No one ever checks. And I'd say that's the biggest problem. And here's another one. The what's more likely question I like to ask people at the proverbial cocktail party discussions about this sort of thing. What's more likely? That these 19 guys living in the nooks and crannies of a democratic society are able to pull this off? Or thousands and thousands of Bush operatives would have had to be in on this, planting the bombs, igniting them, flying the planes by remote control, controlling the passengers, getting rid of them later, covering it up, doing this, that. I mean, if you look at all the claims, there had to be thousands of people involved. Not one of them wants to go on Larry King Live and say, man, if I got a story for you, the conspiracy is true. I know because I was there at the meeting, or I heard this guy, I met this guy who told me about it, or I was there. Not one of them wants to go to Simon & Schuster and say, I have the best-selling book of the year for you, or go on 60 Minutes or, you know, a tell-all article in Time Magazine. Not one of them has accidentally, with pillow talk, told their sweetheart about the inside scoop they got. I mean, here's the problem. People can't keep their mouth shut. That's the problem with conspiracy theories, is that, remember Ben Franklin's comment on this, three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead. People can't keep secrets. They can't keep their mouth shut. And so think of all the people that would have to be involved. And look what happens to Bush administration officials when they leave office. What do? They go on the lecture circuit, they go on 60 Minutes, they write tell-all books, they write tell-all articles, they have their own blogs and web pages, they go on HuffingtonPost.com and they tell all the inside dirt they saw. They can't keep their mouth shut. I mean, and that's just little mundane stuff, or all the way up to things about how we got into the war. You don't think we'd hear about this really important thing? So that's a showstopper right there.
Well, thanks very much for taking the time to talk with me this morning.
No, you're welcome.
I've been talking with Michael Shermer. Michael Shermer is the founder of the Skeptic Society and editor of The Skeptic magazine.